Well, good morning, TNC family, on this third Sunday in September, where my voice is just a little scratchy. I know, I'm just getting over a tiny bug. But more importantly, where we are in a series called This Can Change the World. This can change the world. And I want to talk with you today about how beauty can change the world. And what I mean is the kind of beauty that goes deeper than just what you see with your eyes. I mean, an experience like the psalmist describes in the scriptures, where one night he's looking up into the night sky and he sees something with his eyes, colors and shapes and so on, but he experiences something even deeper and more beautiful in his heart and in his mind. Psalm chapter 8 and verses 3 and 4. When I look at the night sky and I see the work of your fingers, the moon and the stars that you have set in place, what are mere mortals that you should think about them, human beings that you should care for them? This beauty that I'm seeing, he says, with my cornea, iris, pupil, lens, retina, and optic nerves, moves me to places of deeper awe and perspective and dignity and value and connection with the divine. This beauty is changing me. And that's the kind of beauty I'm talking about, TNC, beauty that takes you deeper into places that are more. I mean, like an experience the Apostle Paul writes about in his letter to the church at Corinth, chapter 5 and verse 7. He writes, "For we live by faith, not only by sight." In other words, there's a deeper layer of living that goes beyond what you see. And it might begin with Roy G. Biv, but then it moves to your soul, your consciousness, to a place of transcendence. C.S. Lewis, the great 20th century writer and Christian thinker, he described this in a sermon he preached at Oxford University in 1941. The text of it is now included in a book of his essays called The Weight of Glory. And he says there, quote, "We do not want merely to see beauty, though God knows even that is bounty enough. We want something else which can hardly be put into words, which is to be united with the beauty we see, to pass into it, to receive the beauty into ourselves, to bathe in it, to become part of it." And TNC, that's the kind of beauty I'm talking about. That's the kind of beauty that I believe can change the world. But today is not about, okay, then how can I take it in and receive it and experience it myself? Although that is important. Rather, today is about how we are called to be creators of this kind of transcendent beauty. Because in Genesis chapter 1, in the beginning, in that first garden scene, what we see is the beginning of God's project. What we see is God creating an unfinished world with fish and birds and animals that will need to grow and multiply and explore, with stars and planets and galaxies that will need to expand and explode, with plants and trees that will produce fruit, that will contain seeds, that will eventually grow new trees, that will produce new fruit, that contain more seeds to make more new trees. It's an unfinished world, exploding with life and beauty and complexity and diversity, and all of this advancing in such a way so that tomorrow will be different from today, because it's all going somewhere. And in the middle of all this unfinishedness, God creates humans, you and me, in the image of God. And Adam and Eve are told that they have a role in the development, caring for, and ordering of the material world. Now you take it somewhere, God says. Now you create beauty. Now you name this, draw that, blend those, discover that. Now you create moments of beauty and bursts of life. Now you create little gardens of Eden wherever you go. That's our mandate. Genesis 1 is the beginning of an unfinished story that goes on in us, which means our question is, what kind of world will we create? And I hope you see, I'm not now just talking about big moves of creativity. I'm not saying we should necessarily think I have to write a symphony like Beethoven or paint a masterpiece like Monet or craft words like Maya Angelou or sing a song like Taylor Swift or innovate with technologies like Elon Musk. I'm talking about everyday creation of beauty. How can I send this text in a way that brings love? How do I prepare this meal for my spouse or children? How do I decorate a room and go about selecting colors and fabrics and shapes? How do I greet somebody when I see them at work Monday morning? I'm talking about creating beauty in our everyday moments with this essay, blog, or book, with this day at work or in the classroom, with that plan, project, challenge, phone call, or lunch date, in the kitchen, in the hallway, along this road. You know, sometimes people think of faith and spirituality as, well, what do I have to believe about God? Or what instructions do I need to obey? Or what does the Bible say about that? But that is nowhere in the creation intent. God's intention at creation was and remains for us to continue to add beauty to the world, to create moments of beauty wherever we go. Which leads to this question, how can we add beauty to our world? Well, I want to suggest three ways now, three what I'm going to call brushstrokes of beauty, and I don't know if that's the best metaphor, but we're going to go with it. So here we go. Here's the first brushstroke of beauty, excellence. Excellence, because there is almost nothing more inspiring and magnetic and wonderful than when you and I do something with excellence. Think for a second about the opposite. Think about how drawn you are to the person who does things halfway, with as little commitment and care as possible. Hey, meet my friend. He shows up at the last minute possible, if at all. Sometimes he comes late. He does work that it'll do like in a pinch if there's no other options, and his product is average at best. He dresses sloppy, talks irresponsibly, showers as little as possible. He looks you in the eye as little as possible. Go to a restaurant and you'll notice he tips as little as possible, and he does work that is, well, barely good enough for government work. That's not the kind of beauty and excellence that's going to change the world. Because God is into a higher form of excellence. In fact, the first time in the Bible when we meet someone who is filled with God's Spirit, we see someone filled with God's Spirit for the sake of doing something with excellence. It's in Exodus chapter 35. The Israelites are traveling across the Sinai Peninsula. God wants the people to build a tabernacle, a place for God to dwell, a sanctuary that would be a sacred place where God could meet his people, where the leaders and the people would come together to worship and offer sacrifices. And God instructs them to build this tabernacle, and he gives them a detailed blueprint. You can read it. Types of materials, size of materials, amount of material, placement of the material, and then, watch this, he selects the person he wants to be the builder of the tabernacle. Exodus 35, verse 1, then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, I have chosen Bezalel, the son of Uri, the son of Hur, of the tribe of Judah, and I have filled him with the Spirit of God, with skill, ability, and knowledge in all kinds of crafts, to design artistic works, to work in gold and silver and bronze, in cutting jewels for setting and carving wood, and to work in all manner of craftsmanship of excellence. God says, I choose Bezalel to do the work because he's going to do excellent work. Now, this is exactly the same with you and me, TNC. We have been chosen as well. Jesus in John 15 says to his disciples, you did not choose me. I chose you and I appointed you so that you might go and bear fruit. What kind of fruit? Excellent fruit, fruit that will last. 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 9. But you are a chosen people, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, God's special possession. Colossians chapter 1, Paul says, to them God has chosen to make known among the Gentiles the glorious riches of this mystery, which is Christ in you, the hope of glory. TNC, God has chosen us to be a part of this ongoing flourishing in the world, and he's filled us with his Spirit in order to do something with excellence. And if you're thinking, well, then it can't be me because I don't have any skills, then just know that the kind of excellence I'm talking about that I believe can change the world is excellence of spirit, of being filled with God's Spirit. So you wake up every day and you move through each day with a desire to bring your very best to every moment, to enter interactions with a spirit of humility and teachability, with a willingness to work hard, improve whatever your hand is finding to do, with a kind of honesty and attention to detail and respect for the dignity of others that creates little bursts of Garden of Eden beauty wherever you go. I'm talking about brushstrokes of excellence. And when people see you filled with God's Spirit and producing excellence, it's not going to just be that they see beauty with their eyes. They're going to feel it in deeper places. And it's going to lead them to places of hope and peace and beauty and connection with the divine. That's the first brushstroke of beauty, excellence. Here's the second, enthusiasm. Enthusiasm. And now I want to read you a very quick story, which is an alternative telling of Genesis chapter 1 in an old book that I first read in 1997 called The Life You've Always Wanted by John Ortberg. He's a PhD in clinical psychology, a former pastor. He writes, in the beginning, it was 9 o'clock, so God had to go to work. He filled out a requisition to separate light from darkness. He considered making stars to beautify the night and planets to fill the skies, but thought it sounded like too much work. And besides, thought God, that's not really in my job description. So he decided to knock off early, call it a day, and he looked at what he had done and he said, it'll have to do. On the second day, God separated the waters from the dry land, and he made all the dry land flat, plain, and functional, so that, behold, the whole earth looked like Idaho. He thought about making mountains and valleys and glaciers and jungles and forests, but he decided it wouldn't be worth the effort, and God looked at what he had done that day and said, it'll have to do. He made a pigeon to fly in the air, and a carp to swim in the waters, and a cat to creep upon the dry ground. And God thought about making millions of other species of all sizes and shapes and colors, but he just couldn't drum up any enthusiasm for any other animals. In fact, he wasn't too crazy about the cat. Besides, it was almost time for the late show, so God looked at all he had done and said, it'll have to do. The end of the week, God was seriously burned out, so he breathed a big sigh of relief and said, thank me, it's Friday. Now, TNC, of course, Genesis 1 reads nothing like that. Instead, it echoes and is permeated with the sequence of enthusiasm. God said, and it was so, and he saw that it was very good. There's a Christian theologian and a professor who has written widely on ethics, culture, education, a man named Bijan Gurion. He's a grandchild of Armenian immigrants who fled the genocide of the Armenians in Turkey during World War I. And he has a book called The Melody of Faith, in which he writes, quote, God is more like a cantor who chants his creation into existence and rejoices everlastingly over its beautiful harmony. His song continues, its melody moves and inspires us to restore beauty and harmony to creation that is fallen and misshapen. It's enthusiasm. And it's not just Genesis 1. It's actually hard to read the scriptures without seeing it everywhere. Miriam sings a glorious song in front of all the Israelites when they cross the Red Sea. David dances before the Lord. The psalmists use tambourines, drums, harps, guitars, anything else they can find as instruments of noise and praise to God. Mary Magdalene, she pours expensive perfume on Jesus' feet and rubs them with her hair. The Apostle Paul rejoices with enthusiasm in suffering. And many of you know, at church here, we have all kinds of small groups. We have men's group, women's group, fantasy sports groups, restaurant trivia groups, exercise and outdoor work groups. We also have a TNC book club. And I bring that up because we're just finishing reading now a book by Kelly Corrigan, her New York Times best-selling book called Tell Me More, Stories About the 12 Hardest Things I'm Learning to Say. And one of my favorite chapters is a chapter that's just 2 pages long with a one-word title, Yes. It's a whole chapter, which is just a running list of things she says she will always say yes to. Now, how cool is that? How filled with enthusiasm is that? And you read her book and you know. Because her book is a lot about how life is far from perfect and it's filled with setbacks and trouble and pain and death. But you read her book and you know that she exudes this enthusiasm amid all of that. The result of which is little infusions of energy and hope, little bursts of Garden of Eden joy wherever she goes. Makes me think of Bear Grylls, the best-selling author, former member of the UK Reserve Special Forces. He's the host of those survival television shows, Man vs. Wild, and so on. And he actually said this week, I loved it, he said, I often cook with my machete. But he's got a chapter in his book, A Survival Guide for Life, and the chapter is called, quote, Be the Most Enthusiastic Person You Know. Enthusiasm, he says, often makes the critical difference in any situation. It sustains you when times are tough, encourages those around you. It can make such a massive and positive difference that it should be taught as part of a school's curriculum. Enthusiasm 101, 201, 301, 401. Now, he's not talking about faking things, but he's talking about how beautiful enthusiasm is because it can change a moment and improve a day and enliven a whole season of life. It's beautiful. It reminds me of those words of Sheldon Van Auken. The best argument for Christianity is Christians, their joy, their certainty, their completeness. But the strongest argument against Christianity is also Christians. Their somberness, joylessness, when they're self-righteous and smug in complacent consecration, then Christianity dies 1,000 deaths. And so I just believe TNC, the enthusiasm, is one of the brushstrokes of beauty that we're invited to bring into our world. And by the way, just really quick, if you're not feeling enthusiastic in your life right now, let me give you one quick place to start to pursue it. Start with serving somebody else. Give to somebody else. Sacrifice for somebody else. I'm telling you, it'll lift your spirit. It'll bring you energy. And it'll set you on the road to being more enthusiastic. But that's the second brushstroke that I think we're called to use in order to create beauty in our world. We must paint our worlds with enthusiasm. Which leads me to the final brushstroke of beauty, and this is going to be a quick one. I just want to say, you can be excellent, and you can be enthusiastic, but if you don't have love, then you're nothing. Or as Paul writes in 1 Corinthians 13, if I speak in the tongue of men and of angels, but I don't have love, I'm only a resounding gong or a clanging cymbal. if I have the gift of prophecy, and I can fathom all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have faith that can move mountains, but I don't love, I'm nothing. If I give all I possess to the poor, I surrender my body to the flames, but I don't have love, I gain nothing. For in the end, these three remain: faith, hope, and love. But the greatest of these, the most beautiful of these, is love. TNC, how committed are you to becoming a loving person? Is it the center of your life? Because beauty can change the world. There's nothing more beautiful than love. And I got to tell you, I just wish Christians were known first and foremost for their love, not their commitment to following the Ten Commandments or to pointing out where others don't, not to their patriotism, not to their stance on the justice system, the Second Amendment, public schools, or their preferred gender pronouns, not their 401ks or their Roth IRAs, but instead their love. Because God is love, and when we live out love, it is a beauty that can change the world. Now, one final word on beauty, and it's the answer to this question: why does it even matter? Why bother adding beauty? Why bother doing things with excellence and enthusiasm and love? Well, that's a great question. Here's an answer: because the Bible, beginning in Genesis 1 and going all the way through to Revelation 22, is just telling us a whole story about how we were created to be involved in the work of new creation. We were created to add beauty. Further, it's a story not of how we're going to leave this earth someday, but instead of how God is going to renew our earth, and of how what we do with our lives is part of that renewal. I think of Paul's words to the church at Corinth, chapter 15, verse 58. He's talking about the resurrection of all things, the new heaven and the new earth someday. But then listen to this. He says, therefore, in light of that great ultimate hope, therefore, my dear brothers and sisters, stand firm, let nothing move you. Always give yourselves fully to the work of the Lord, because you know that your labor in the Lord is not in vain. In other words, somehow what we do in the present, somehow the beauty we create now, is going to be part of the new world that God is going to make then. Jesus says something similar in Mark chapter 9. He says, even when you give a cup of cold water to a person who's thirsting, even that small act of beauty will not go unremembered. Somehow even that will be taken up and woven into this great tapestry of new creation. And it's hard to always know how sometimes, how my painting, my song, my words, my act of kindness, my excellence, my enthusiasm, my love will make it. But somehow it will make it to that era. There's that old analogy of a stonemason working on a pattern in a single block of stone that will ultimately be part of a cathedral. And the stonemason is told, just carve out this one bit of stone with this one particular pattern. And the mason can't see in that moment how their individual pattern will fit into the next stone and its pattern, because someone else is working on that. But it's only when all of the stones are gathered and put on that great eastern wall of the cathedral that they all make sense. For we're creating beauty one stone at a time, one day at a time, one interaction at a time. And somehow, in the words of Russian writer Fyodor Dostoevsky, beauty is going to save the world. And that's my encouragement for us today, that we would recover and have a renewed commitment to this theology of beauty. Will you pray with me? God, I just want to pause right now and pray for every person listening. I pray that they would, in this moment, recognize that you have only ever given them your best. You've always been full of excellence for us. And you've always been full of enthusiasm for being involved in our lives, for caring for what matters to us. And then, of course, ultimately, you are a God of love. You so love the world that you gave. I pray that we would come into closer understanding and connection with that today. I pray that we would be people who advance those things in our world. And now, TNC, I pray that the Lord would bless you and keep you, make his face to shine upon you and be gracious to you, turn his face towards you and give you peace. Amen.